We are officially into summer now, according to the calendar. And with school vacations, it's a good time for a lot of folks to make use of parks. Of course, you don't need to wait for vacation time to do that. But the role of public parks in cities is an interesting one. It's one that our contributing editor, Neil Milner, has been looking at. And he joins us with more on that today in the segment of The Long View. Parks.
Yes. I was going to say that if you look at the community college employment list, political scientist is probably down there
not
pretty
the top
low
listing.
with proprietor of lemonade stands. So we're not much in that community college future, I'm afraid. Yes, I took a look at the parks thing, partly because of the reason that you say, but also because here the discussion and sometimes the battle over the parks are pretty common. You have that one going on in Ala Moana right now, at Ala Moana Park. You have it in regard to the homeless about fear and possession and so on. And we've always had a kind of mixed, always being, say, the last 100 years, a sort of mixed reaction to park. They're an oasis, they're a place to go, yet at the same time people get fearful. So it's been a discussion about parks and development and a sense of community for a long time. So recently a couple of social scientists took a look at the basic question of whether parks increase crime or whether they reduce crime. And this has been studied before, but they looked at 300 cities. So you got a pretty good sample there.
It's a pretty big sample,
yeah. And they looked at four rather large cities in detail. And they find out good news and bad news. That first of all, greenery, which is just shrubbery and so on. If your neighborhood is green, in every one of the cities, greenery was associated. This is not parks. This is just greenery with reductions in crime. With some exceptions in Chicago and Detroit and Newark, where there's some really stubborn crime. But greenery is not parks. If you look at parks itself, which is kind of government greenery, you find something that's a little less optimistic. That is that crime is considerably higher in areas next to a park compared to, say, a mile away. But some city parks do better. So what you have then is a very desirable resource in which if it's not enforced in a proper way, you can have problems, crime problems. If it's done in a proper way, it actually can reduce crime.
Of course, the magic of that, as in so much with public policy, is it comes down to execution.
It does come down to execution, which is always a problem in government. But it's pretty clear on the basis of other parks and where they've been successful, what makes a difference. Good lighting, what's called legibility, that is, a person who is entering a park has the ability to picture that park. Where does he or she feel safe? What's over here? What's over there? It doesn't mean getting rid of all the shrubbery. That doesn't work. In fact, people don't use a park if they get kind of desolate. It means having clear pathways so people know where they can walk. It also means trying, and it means designated certain areas for certain things. But it also means, and this is a kind of, it feeds on this, it also means that the park has to have a lot of activity in it at all hours when you want people to use it. So if you have activities in parks at night, you have them in designated areas, you have them well lit, you want people, you don't want the areas near parks to be desolate. So none of this is really rocket science, but a lot of government isn't rocket science. It's essentially designing things in a proper way and then making sure that you're implementing them along the line. And I guess what I'm probably telling everybody is what they really feel if they're ever interested in encountering a park. And I say if they're ever interested, because a lot of people have just sort of written them off. But when you think about going to a park, some of these things just come to you as without even thinking about it, about whether I feel I can go into this or not.
And I guess in Hawaii, number one, I mean, this is largely parks within the context of an urban environment.
Absolutely.
So even in Hawaii, and differing, you know, of course, island to island, but you have these situations where you have parks. I guess what I'm going towards is what policy lessons locally are here. I mean, I'm thinking Waikiki consideration now in terms of a local park area and upside downside on that.
Well, I think the best thing we can, one of the ways to think about it, we don't really have this kind of precise data on which parks are here or not, but you can use kind of these as a guide when you look into the parks. And Ala Moana is a good example. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like going into Ala Moana at night? Where, why, and so on. So you look at things like lighting. You look at things like people that you perceive as threats inside a park. I say perceive as, and so that might be the homeless. You look at the kind of conveniences that are there. Are the restrooms clean? You look at, to me, an interesting park is Kapi'olani Park because it's very heavily used, but the center of it is this big grassy area. And at night, I don't know. I mean, I guess I've walked across the park at night because you can never park anywhere on Kalakaua, right? And that's, if it's used, it feels comfortable. If it doesn't, it doesn't feel comfortable. And so I think those are the things you have to look for. You know, people complain here about the maintenance of parks, and that's a way for people not to use them. And then if you don't use them, you create this kind of a vicious circle. To me, the interesting one, and I don't know very much about it, but I've been out there and looked around, is the Patsy Mink soccer tennis thing out in out toward Mililani.
Right.
Because it's this big expansive piece of land. It's basically open with some trees, but they've built these interesting kind of walking paths in there. Mm. And I wonder if how much of that is an attraction. When I say I wonder, I don't mean as a skeptic.
Right.
I mean it's very inviting in some ways, but I don't know what that park is like at night. But you and I were talking about the difference in growing up at certain generations. When we grew up, parks were kind of taken for granted as a safe space. A lot of that changed because of race issues, for sure. And this is the dirty little secret that people tend to get afraid of going into parks if it's another racial group that's in there. And you have to take that into consideration.
You know, you mentioned something else within the context of this with parks generally, which is the idea of social infrastructure.
Yes.
Where people hang out, where people gather, what is a comfortable social situation. And this doesn't have to be, you know, outdoor parks. I mean, it can be public libraries,
yes.
You mentioned as an example of that.
Yeah, I've written about social infrastructure in other places. Social infrastructure is places where people, essentially, where people gather and have face-to-face. That doesn't mean that you sit down and bare your soul with folks, but it means places in your neighborhood, in your vicinity, where you tend to see people enough to be familiar with them. It might be a church, library for sure. And we know from other research that that's extraordinarily important in building up a kind of sense of safety and watching out for one another. One quick one is that old-fashioned schools where you don't drive your kids to school, but where you got these schools where people crowd in the morning and the parents walk them over, turns out to be an important kind of social infrastructure because the parents meet one another and then they tend to have coffee and do other things. So this is part, the park itself is part of a social infrastructure. And one of the ways you can use your own eyes to see is to look at what parks seem to be little gathering places for different groups, and at what time is these gathering places be the case. And so I think one park to watch is Mother Waldron Park, because that's a always a tug of war between whether they run the homeless out and whether they don't. It appears to me when they don't allow the homeless to sit in there, the park is used a little bit more, but it's still a lot of green space that people aren't comfortable with.
You know, it's interesting. That's an example in Kaka'ako in terms of the impact as well as what's going on immediately around the park, as you mentioned previously.
Yes, it is. And Kaka'ako, particularly the downtown side where SALT is, does really have some very interesting kind of social infrastructure spaces, the developing small restaurants and little gathering places on the corner, doesn't have a library and so on. So it'll be interesting to see how parks get integrated into that social infrastructure, because that does have a kind of neighborhood feeling to it, at least to my eyes. And I spend a fair amount of time walking around down there.
It's an interesting perspective on parks in ways that you may not have thought about.
Yes.
Thanks, Neil.
Yes, you're welcome.
Yeah. Neil Milner, retired professor of political science and contributing editor of our segment, The Long View.